Good morning, everyone. This is Julie Fedorchak with the Public Service Commission. We are gathered on the 12th floor of the State Capitol for a work session on case number 15-124. It is about 9:38. We're about 8 minutes late getting started, but we had a few things to gather up for this work session, and we'll kick it off. This is on the Rolette Wind Power Project. We've had one work session in a few weeks ago on this, discussed it, and now I think we're back to hopefully finalize our discussions on this and wrap things up. So I don't have any opening comments other than to say when we left it the last time, we were sort of looking at the footprint and how we were going to handle that. And then some interesting information has come in regard to the Eagle Nest since our last discussion as well. So I think that is an item that I look forward to talking about a little bit more as well this morning. But otherwise, I would invite Commissioner Christman, if he has any opening comments, then we'll leave it to Commissioner Kalk, who's the portfolio holder on this project.
I will make some opening comments, and it'll probably be most of what I have to say on the whole subject. So as you recall, at the hearing and at the work session, I really feel strongly in light of the changes that the legislature made with siting laws that these things,
excuse me,
all these infrastructure things ought to be sited with a pretty constrained site map. And so, you know, I didn't have an exact distance from each turbine or from each connecting line or each road, but I thought that it ought to be laid out in a pattern that follows those things and not have all this additional acreage in there. However, what the roadblock that I seem to find with that whole concept is, I believed that they could continue to lease this other property that would then not be in their site and have their deals with the landowners, and by leasing that land, make sure that the landowners wouldn't construct something that would block the wind resources or anything like that. But the way it appears, the law seems to be pretty clear that they can only keep that land for 5 years if it's not in the site. So with that obstacle in place, I don't really see how that is the right way to follow through at this point, because it would be wrong to expect them to construct a facility knowing that someone else just a short distance away can put something up in front of it. I don't know what that would be. It seems kind of far-fetched. But these are also very expensive propositions, and so I guess that I think that the legislature ought to be looking at changing that law, that they can maintain these leases if facilities have been constructed. I think the law was passed one time because people were going out and leasing up wind options and keeping them indefinitely and never building anything, and then no one else could build anything either. But in a case like this where something is constructed, I think they should be able to hold the leases but not exert as much influence over that property as this is going to allow. But anyway, the law is the law as it is now, and so I can't see moving forward with that kind of a requirement. The only other thing I'll bring up, and this is generic to wind farms in general, in light of the Clean Power Plan, I think there's a whole lot of that that's unclear to even the experts. In fact, I think there's a lot of it that's not as clear to the EPA as what they probably would like to lead us to believe. Very complicated and I think ill-conceived plan. But anyway, as close as I've been able to understand it, one of the concerns for North Dakota is that we get all of the credit for all the CO2 that's produced in North Dakota from coal plants, even though the power might be flowing to other states. But if renewable resources are constructed in North Dakota, it's a very strong likelihood that the state that is, where the power is flowing to is going to get credit for that. And part of me feels like as soon as we've got this figured out, we should be looking at ways that we can require that that credit be aimed for North Dakota. I don't know what that solution is at this time, and I don't know if it's fair to drag these decisions out, but, you know, becoming the place where all the other states go to build, put up their wind towers in order for them to get their RECs, or under the Clean Power Plan, I think it's called something other than RECs, but it's essentially the same thing. I'm not very comfortable with that either. But like I say, as unclear as the Clean Power Plan is at this time, I'm not sure we can be holding up all these projects trying to figure that out either. But I do throw it out for discussion purposes, because if somebody's got a clear idea of how to do that, maybe it is something that we should be looking at.
It's interesting to think about that in terms of siting. I wouldn't have naturally put it there, but there might not be any other tools available. It is part of orderly development.
It might be the only...
It could be conceived as orderly development.
It's probably the only avenue, if that avenue even exists, it's probably the only avenue that we have. And this commission is probably the only tool that would be in place to try and exert that. I don't know who else would.
Mm-hmm.
The developers are going to want to send it probably to their customers, and that's probably best for them. But never getting credit for any of these things is certainly not best for North Dakota.
Interesting thought. Thanks for throwing that out, Randy. do you want to pursue that at some point? Do you want to? I mean, it's
we should probably just worth having something for a clean power plant update, because I don't think that I'd want to go down a road at first brush of making siting tied to what you're talking about. But maybe. But we definitely got to figure out what we're going to do with the clean power plant. I think it's part of that discussion.
I agree.
Yeah, I think.
Thinking about adding a scheduling item this afternoon on Clean Power Plan. I've been canoodling that a little bit myself in terms of, you know, options, and they're all over the board, from nothing to lots of things. So let's get a work session scheduled on that now that we're all back.
At this point, I mean, I could go either way on holding this up or not holding it up, but unless either or both of you feel strongly that we should hold this up in order to look at that more, this is probably one that the timing of it, I guess I'm thinking we probably just need to move on with it but address the clean power plant options in the future. But I did want to bring it up, and then that we're not setting a precedent that, oh, well, you knew about the clean power plan and you already approved one. It's
I think it's
a matter of learning more about the clean power plan, I think.
It's something we probably need to have as part of our discussion at the hearings if we're going to do that, because right now it wouldn't be any place in the record.
Or in the notice
or anything, yeah. I mean, it's just, so I don't think we can incorporate that into this project. Sort of like some of the reclamation things we're working on too. We can't really just add those after the fact to projects requirements that we come up with along the way. It's one of the hard things about our work right now here is that we have a lot of big issues to think through, and meanwhile we're constantly getting applications that there's no break in our workload and in our permitting to provide the time period to think through some of this stuff and then incorporate it in. We just have to keep going and add things as we are able to get through them.
I'm going to throw this out, and sometimes I worry that we hamstring ourselves too much by striving for perfection. And I feel good about the way this commission has always handled things, with doing everything technically correct and really following the line. But, you know, other government agencies, the EPA, they imposed something like this. There was never anything in the comment period about a 45% cut in emissions in North Dakota, but they went ahead and imposed it on us. And then we feel like, well, you know, we can't really react because this wasn't discussed in the hearing, or it wasn't on the notice or whatever. And it seems like we hamstring ourselves sometimes following these technicalities that others aren't following.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's not, I mean, this is a long ways, and they're expecting this. They have construction plans and such. In this case, I'm not so hung up on it, but I do think, as we discussed, we should have a Clean Power Plan meeting now that
we're all here.
We've gotten through some of the scheduling surge we had here in August.
Yep. Okay. Fine.
Just, yeah, the, Commissioner Crispin, I agree with you wholeheartedly about the Clean Power Plan. I think we need to do, like Commissioner Fedorchuk said, get something out there and look at where that, who's going to get credit for what, and follow our comments with the AG, get to the governor's office, do all those things. But to your comments about, you know, pushing the envelope on citing and record, I'm not there yet, my friend, because it's the first time these orders get appealed. It's because we've held, this body's held, that doing things right, so when our orders get appealed, they hold. We start cutting corners. I'm very leery that when we get these things get appealed or they get looked at tighter, that they don't hold, and then we've lost a lot of credibility. So it's a good discussion point, but I wanted to counter back that a little bit, because it's, I've had a lot of my orders appealed over the years, and knock on wood, they've held, and it's because of good advice from the legal counsel. But it is that the part about the record development, as Julie's pointed out many times, we should perhaps make our announcements a little broader so we can come back to some of those things. But back to this order, Commissioner Crispin, with your comments about the footprint finalization, if you will, that was what had us hung up before, because I had this up for a vote before, and I withdrew it at the last minute, hopeful to get a 3-0 vote on it instead of a 2-1. So I'm ready to vote and move it forward, with the exception of this affidavit with the eagle that popped up. That I'm a little concerned about. That's, to me, the only thing that we asked them to submit that. And that was one of the things we had in, one of the findings that, 32, that at the public hearing regarding a reference, we asked them to provide more information, which they did. And this is one that maybe I'd like legal to kind of walk through a little bit, because I think this could be a big deal. So, Jack, maybe you want to give us your thoughts, or Jerry.
Right. So part of our selection criteria involves, with construction and operation of this project, that the animal safety and health have to be maintained at acceptable level to the commission. Along with that, we did receive that affidavit. And if you remember at the hearing, I think the concern was that there was an actual eagle's nest within the project area. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jerry, but I believe that came up, and they attested to the fact that there was not. Mm-hmm. And which, from this affidavit that they provided, it looks like they were right. They went in there and they actively checked it out, and there was not an active eagle's nest within the area. However, within the proximity, there was an eagle's nest within 2.4 miles, 4.8, and I think one was, if you look on the map of the affidavit, about 18 miles out, so that one's a ways out. Along with this, there, if you remember also from, I think under Exhibit E from the hearing, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they, you know, even though they didn't show up and testify at the hearing, they did file something that stated that this would likely be a Category 1, which would be a high risk to eagles, and they should try to mitigate this to a Category 2. Now, I just found this morning on the different categories, and I think I dispersed that among all of you about the different categories. And to be quite honest, there's a whole section on how to calculate whether it's in Category 1 or Category 2. I couldn't tell you where we're at with that, whether this at this point is down to a Category 2. Ultimately, it will be the project that will hold the risk of an eagle taking, the project developers in this situation. But I just wanted to bring that to the commission's attention that as one of their selection criteria, that is something that they should be looking at.
Jack, can you, this doesn't give miles here. in terms of distances. Is there anything that does that?
Miles for the Category 1 and Category 2.
Yeah.
It doesn't, and I think it's based on a I briefly glanced down and at the end of where they try to show you how to calculate it, and I didn't have time to really dig in and this morning and try to figure out how it applies in the situation.
I don't know how this impacts this. Eagle projects that have eagle nests within half the mean project area internest distance to the project footprint should be carefully evaluated.
So I think part of the concern is the fact that I do believe they're doing a bird and bat mitigation plan. But the way, at least this Category 2 looks like, it says there's opportunity to mitigate the impacts, whereas 1, the impacts is low. So that might be, if we're still in a Category 1, I'm not sure if that's something the commission would be concerned about.
Well, the only mitigation that I'm aware of would be to move the towers. Is there other mitigation steps that can be made to impact and reduce the risk for eagles?
The only thing I've been aware of has been like with whipping cranes. They say if you see one in the area, you're going to curtail, you know, shut down the turbines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if eagles would raise to something of that level, because they're not as serious as the whooping cranes are. They're not an endangered species anymore. There is eagle protections, federal laws and stuff for them.
But before you go too far, they're protected under different parts of the federal law, not just the threatened endangered species.
I'm not saying we should eat them or anything like that. But
no, but I'm saying that we need to be clear. There's T&E species, but they're also protected under some other law. The yeah. Eagle. I mean, so it's there even is. If they're not one, they're still protected under federal law somewhere else.
Right.
There is, but in my mind, it's a fish and wildlife issue.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Where are they at in this? They're the experts on this.
And you know, that is, in my mind, that is the problem, is they send out these letters ahead of time that sound like the world's coming to an end, and then I don't hear anything more from them on it. The company says that they continue to work with them. But anything that we ever hear is just whatever the company reports. I think there's not a federal jurisdiction here for fish and wildlife because there's no UEPA. And
no what, Jerry? What's a UEPA?
Utility Environmental Protection, environmental assessments.
Okay.
That would require a federal environmental impact statement or assessment.
Let me just throw this out to my colleagues, kind of off the cuff, but on things like a NEPA where there's a federal nexus, I don't worry about the NEPA because a lot of what they do is overlap to what we do. I definitely believe that. But in areas like this, I think that we should hear something from the Fish and Wildlife Service, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, on this before we would move. I'm not comfortable with knowing that there's eagles in the area and then just approving it.
I think they did. They tried to contact the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. However, they were referred from them to the North Dakota Game and Fish, and this is actually how they provide this eagle's nest information.
Okay.
And that's my understanding.
So on number 10 in the affidavit, it says, KLG consulted with Kevin Shelley with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. This was on July 14th regarding the letter and the presence or absence of eagles' nests within or in proximity to. Mr. Shelley directed KLJ to contact North Dakota Game and Fish Department. And then there was this kind of multi-phased examination of an eagle nest data, where at first they didn't have any, and then on July 16th, eagle nest data provided by Game Fish was not included in the North Dakota Game Fish. Okay, so then they didn't, they checked the Game and Fish listing. It wasn't included. And then did Game and Fish give them a new listing or additional information? What was that all about, Jerry?
That's unclear. They said they had a database from North Dakota Game and Fish that they had a license to. I think it was North Dakota Game and Fish.
Yep.
And it wasn't in there. And so evidently there must have been an updated database or something. Somehow or other, Game and Fish says now it's in there.
And there are 2.4 miles and 4.5 miles, and they're active eagle nests.
And they said the KLJ sent somebody out there to check them out, and they found them, and they're active.
And just so the commissioners know, we do have Molly Smith, I believe, over the bridge right now.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this is an evolving issue. I've never really realized that Game and Fish is the ones that handles eagles' nests. Is this typically where we hear about this stuff? It seems like U.S. Fish and Wildlife has always been.
Yeah, to me it's been Fish and Wildlife, but Game and Fish also is, you know, they've got their list of endangered species and where they've been found and seen at. And so they do have a state jurisdiction. They're kind of like the state agency with the federal counterpart is Fish and Wildlife.
If it's like, it's very confusing, because if it's a full-blown NEPA, the Fish and Wildlife Service will respond to eagle stuff. If there's not a NEPA, they may push it down to the local jurisdiction, if you will, to let them make the call and to them hold to hold the responsibility.
Jack, this came from what, the Category 1, 2,
This came three. From the Eco Conservation Plan Guide from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And I believe one other thing, too, to point out is I think on the last certification order revision, I believe that the eagle, like providing notice to of eagle strikes or anything like that or eagles in the area was omitted from it.
Was what?
That was one of the changes. I believe that provision was taken out.
In our certification document?
Yes.
Because we figured we had already included it, just not specific to eagles. There was something about endangered or threatened species, right?
I believe so, yeah.
So we just thought it was redundant?
And that may have been the case. I don't exactly recall.
I don't know why it was taken out either.
That's, I think, why.
I thought it was redundant. Right?
Wasn't that the discussion that we were trying to consolidate things that were redundant and we'd asked for notification of these things?
There was also...
You might want to grab a. We have people listening. They probably want to hear the whole conversation.
I think that there was a discussion that was initiated by Commissioner Kalk, at least, about how we didn't want to be involved in the eagle thing and the taking and all that. Mm. And I can't remember why that was, but.
I don't recall that.
Well, I'm looking at it, and it says that. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but generally the company agrees to report to the commission the presence in or near the approved site of any critical habitat or threatened or endangered species they become aware of, which were not previously reported to the commission. So in this case, I suppose these would be previously reported to the commission.
Is that the certification document?
Correct.
I probably have one in here.
How about something like this, where we go back and we ask the company to provide a map, and I don't know how we would do it, but basically an overlay of where these eagle nests are at.
They're on it. It's on the back of the...
I looked at that. It wasn't clear to me. See, maybe you can walk me through that.
Oh, you didn't get a color one. That's why.
Oh.
I actually have an extra color one. Don't worry, Jack. Here you go.
Good to be the queen.
Here, just have this. This is extra.
Okay.
That, and then the next page, I think, is more clear, actually. They're marked.
Okay.
Okay.
So See, I think in my mind, I'm trying to relate back and forth to, like, let's say this was this is on the edge of the Whooping Crane flyway. And so if a company agrees to participate in habitat conservation plan, they're working with the Fish and Wildlife Service, they're doing all those kind of things, and so typically have approved those projects. So is there an equivalent of a habitat conservation plan for eagles that if they agree to participate in all those things with the Fish and Wildlife Service, I could see a path forward? But then the fact that the Fish and Wildlife Service has pushed it down to Game and Fish, I don't know about that. But is there something that the company could agree to or has agreed to continue to work in mitigation measures similar to that?
I believe they did agree to have a plan put in place for bird and bat, so that would include eagles as well.
So number 31 goes through that in the order. I think that gets at what we're looking for, Brian. Prepare an endangered species document / bird and bat conservation strategy prior to operation of the project to identify minimization and mitigation measures that Roulette Power will implement. That and number 3 of number 32 outlines sort of what exists for ongoing efforts to minimize the impact of the eagles flying around in that area. Should we add Roulette Power will coordinate with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service District Office in Bismarck and the North Dakota Game and Fish, since they seem to be kind of passing this one back and forth? Because if then I would like someone to call Game and Fish and ask them why all of a sudden they're becoming the lead. Maybe they've had some discussions with U.S. Fish and Wildlife and decided that they're going to take more of a lead and state on the eagle issue. We should know why, because it's a change. So we should know that, what's going on there. Are you willing to do that, Jerry?
Well, sure. I'm with you guys. I'm just not feeling good about where we're at with this. We don't have an answer.
Well, there's just no data points. Like, when you look at when you look at, like, the Whooping Crane flyway, they show you the flyway, then they show you the rings going out. So if you're inside the flyway, you should do certain things. And we've got a body of knowledge that lets us do those things. When we start getting out in the fringes, then we can back off on some of this. But this, like, I don't know how eagles interact. You'd think between the two nests, there'd be a lot of action. I mean, so it's, I think we need more, right? I mean, just be honest.
Well, they're close.
They're close.
I mean, eagles fly a long way. Yeah. I don't know their distance.
Play eagle pinochle. And
right, exactly. So, I mean, I think it's back on, we need to get more information, and I commend Commissioner Crispin for holding us back a little bit on the footprint to let this flush itself out. It goes to your point of sometimes we need to take a step back and get all this data on things.
Well, I would still think that this wasn't scheduled for today anyway, for today's special meeting.
Absolutely. Agreed.
So we still have the September 2nd meeting, and I think we need to contact Game and Fish, since U.S. Fish and Wildlife is passing the buck to them, and figure out what we should do. Who's responsible for this, and what should we have in place to make sure that we are sure? I just want to know that the proper people are looking at it and advising them. And right now it feels like they're getting tossed between the two agencies that are experts on this.
Okay, so if I'm hearing right, I think you'd like me to go ahead and find out what's going on with this thing on the Game and Fish level and even Fish and Wildlife level, too.
Yeah. And if they, I'm comfortable if they are going to be covering this in number 31 in that plan and 3 of 32. I just want to have the agencies who are the experts in this confirm that, that this will be covered in those things. Versus right now, it feels like we're being kind of tossed between the two of them.
It talks about in here about including any potential mitigation measures that may be implemented. We don't really know what they are.
Right. So, you know, even in their affidavit, they talk about, they say, we contacted U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, then we contacted Game and Fish. We used the database. It was wrong. We used the database again. We found these eagle's nests from the Game and Fish, and then Game and Fish, and then it comes back and says we're going to contact U.S. Fish and Wildlife for next steps. Well, that doesn't, number 14 doesn't do a lot of good if U.S. Fish and Wildlife is always kicking you back to Game and Fish. So, anything else on that subject for Jerry?
Just one parting thought. I don't know if ultimately it makes any difference between three nests or two nests, but the one up north of Botno, that's got to be 30 miles or more away.
I believe it's 18.
Yeah, it's a ways away. The other two are down in closer to the proximity.
But, I mean, I have a hard time imagining that if we're going to, if we would prevent something from happening because of a nest that far away,
yeah,
probably not going to be much happening.
Okay, so we will get a report back. Do you want a report back to each one of us, or do you want another work session scheduled?
You want me to just...
I would like to have this on the agenda in September. I would like to have this on the agenda, don't you think, Brian? If possible, have this wrapped up?
Absolutely, if possible, but there's a lot of questions to be answered.
We're talking about the second agenda here, if you...
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let's get after that information and then keep us posted on what you find out, Jerry. We can make a determination on a work session or not in the next week.
Okay. I'm out of town after today, but I'll try to get a hold of them and so forth. So.
Okay. You're out of town the rest of this week?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe you and Jack can tag team. You try to get a hold of them today and leave your name and Jack's or something so they have somebody to contact back and we can get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
I think the final thought for me would be to help clarify if it's Category 1, Category 2, or Category 3. And then we have a basis of Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, or Game and Fish says this is a Category 2, so then we have things we can require. If they say it's a Category 1, it's different. Or three. I mean, that gives us a framework to make decisions on.
Would it be acceptable if the company used U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on the guidelines and come back with an affidavit showing there was an at least Category 2? That therefore mitigation measures would be more likely to cause or be you are actually able to have the opportunity to mitigate the impacts instead of having a low opportunity.
Whatever they think is fine, but it'd be nice to talk to the experts too, because the company will have an interpretation, but also the experts would have an interpretation.
Another thing I did want to briefly touch on too is these things will need to be put in the record as well. Ms. Smith has given us a waiver for the affidavit, so I'd be requesting, we'll be putting in a motion to file this if that's agreeable to the commission.
A motion to include
this in the record.
Okay, sure.
And also for the additional information that Jerry will be collecting, well, Jerry and I will be collecting, I think we probably should put in a motion as well to be able to include that in the record as well.
Mm-hmm. Does stuff like this have to be added to the record, or is it assumed to be, you know, pertinent to the discussion and it's a government document? This has to be added to the record?
That is actually referenced in the actual application itself.
Okay.
I'll double check on that, though.
I like your idea of, you know, if the company can file an affidavit attesting to the fact that they know it's a Category 2, that would also be helpful.
They should have all the guidelines they need to make that calculation.
And, okay, that provides some more framework as well, better framework. Okay, anything else? Mm-hmm. Good?
Nothing else.
Okay, thank you guys for pushing this one, continuing to push this one forward, and we will conclude close the work session on case number PU-15-124.